This week in the news, we'll hear about city government standing in the way of cleanup after Hurricane Harvey. Also, the Fifth Circuit upholds the sanctuary cities ban. We'll also talk about the unfairness of corporate handouts by Texas cities. In our interview, we'll talk to one candidate in the runoffs about what he's hearing from voters. And we'll close with this week's commentary from Ross Kessig, a success story out of North Texas. Welcome back, friends and neighbors, to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. I want to get started this week with our news. I want to go down to the Bayou City to our good friend Charles Blaine, the Houston Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Good to have you back, Charles, after a little brief campaigning hiatus. We got you back in the saddle covering Houston news there, and you've got a whopper of a story in the follow-up to Hurricane Harvey. The city seems to be further victimizing some of the victims of the natural disaster. Tell us about the new plan and some of the drawbacks to it.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. It's a really interesting plan that the city is currently laying out. They want to require all new residential development, which includes people who are in the process of rebuilding their homes after they were damaged from Hurricane Harvey, to adhere to a new floodplain ordinance. So previously, they had to build residential homes that were in the 100-year floodplain 1 foot above that. So right now what they want to do is expand that and require all homes in the 500-year floodplain to build 2 feet above that. So what the biggest issue is here is that that's pulling in about 85,000 individual parcels and forcing them to adhere to these new expanded regulations.
Yeah, so this is going to be a huge increase in cost for people who are, you know, still struggling to rebuild after the disaster.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, for the average Houston house, somewhere between, you know, 1,000 to 1,800 square feet, they're saying it's going to cost about $10,000 on top of the redevelopment. For bigger homes, which we have some in, you know, our River Oaks areas and elsewhere, it's going to cost about $25,000 to $30,000 on top of what they would normally pay. So it's a significant increase. And unfortunately, the public had very little knowledge about this beforehand.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. You know, part of, you know, in your article about this issue up at TexasScorecard.com, part of the issue here is the city, it feels like the city says, we want to do something. You know, it's this problem in government. Oh, we're in government. We've got to do something. We've got to be seen as doing something. And I think people agree. You know, we want to do something to deal with this flooding issue in Houston. But they also don't appear to be interested in real public input towards getting the best possible public policy that's actually responsive to the public. Tell us about the notice and kind of the lack of notice that went on. I think this is kind of a lesson for people all over the state of how local government can work or fail to work.
Yeah, so we're kind of heading into a new hurricane season. So I think local officials really wanted to show that they were doing something, like you said. And so what they did was, you know, our Mayor Sylvester Turner spoke about doing something for a couple of months, but didn't say what that something was. So then towards the end of February, he rolled out this proposal and told everyone, the public and council, that they had 1 week to look at this, analyze it, give comment, and then it'll be voted on. During the public comment of during this period, it, you know, was released that the developers and other specific interest groups that are aligned with Turner had the proposal for weeks in advance. So they had time to give feedback, you know, identify flaws and things like that. But the public and city council only had a week. So, I mean, I don't think they really wanted input from the public or from our local officials, since they only gave them 7 days to look at this extensive plan.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the people who are going to make money on the plan were able to have input. The people who are going to have to spend money on the plan give very little input. Well, thank you, Charles, for coming on and joining us. Thank you for getting back there in the saddle and covering this. I'm sure there will be more developments to come, and we'll have to keep an eye on them.
Definitely. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Next, I wanted to talk to Sal Ayala with Empire Texans. Sal, you've got an article up, the Fifth Circuit upholding the sanctuary cities ban passed by the legislature last year. Tell us about it.
Sure, Tony. So basically, this is all about Senate Bill 4, which was passed during the regular session last year. And SB 4 basically prohibits sanctuary city policies that bar local law enforcement from inquiring about a person's immigration status or complying with immigration detainer requests.
Yes, basically you had these local governments that were saying, look, we're not going to enforce immigration laws, and they really can't enforce them, but we're not going to cooperate with federal immigration law enforcement, and we're going to ban our police officers from doing anything individually to cooperate with these sort of things. And the state kind of came in and said, look, we're going to put an end to this. Fights for years over this. It finally passes last session. A lot of controversy over it, but it's being upheld by the courts.
Yeah, and it became a big deal, you know, over the previous session. I think it was Dan Patrick went on several media outlets talking about some of the statistics linked to criminal aliens and the crimes that they commit. So just real quick, I can tell you that between 2011 and 2017, over 222,000 criminal aliens were booked into Texas jails.
Wow.
And according to Department of Public Safety, the arrested residents together account for almost 500 homicide convictions, 26,000 assault convictions, 34,000 drug convictions, 246 kidnapping convictions. I mean, the list goes on and on regarding what crimes these criminal aliens are perpetrating on the public.
Yeah, and I think people want their law enforcement to protect them from criminals, hold criminals accountable. They don't want people who are not supposed to legally be in the country being allowed to stay in the country over, you know, political correctness, left-wing agendas related to immigration and amnesty, all these things driving these things forward. What did the court say about it?
So this particular ruling follows up on a ruling that was passed by the Fifth Circuit a few months ago, basically saying that most of the law itself was constitutional, and it lifted some of the injunctions that were placed on the state by the previous court.
Yeah, basically you had a district court, yeah. You know, a liberal district court comes in, strikes the thing down, unsurprising. Fifth Circuit, this is the Court of Appeals, says, no, these things can go forward. These are things the state can lawfully do.
Yeah, so some of that injunction was lifted, like I said, a few months ago, and then the Fifth Circuit, with this ruling, basically lifted all of that injunction minus one tiny provision that prevented local law enforcement, certain officials, from endorsing certain policies which infringed on their free right or right to free speech.
And yeah, so basically you get a free speech ruling in there in the mix of something upholding this sanctuary cities bill. Well, thank you for your reporting on it, Sal, and thank you for coming on and talking about it.
Okay, thanks, Tony.
Now let's turn to Jacob Asmussen, our Central Texas guy, and talk about an article you did. It's about the city of Round Rock, but it's really about the issue of corporate handouts generally. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there and some lessons we could have really for all Texans.
Yeah, so the city is giving out special benefits to hand-picked businesses across the city using taxpayer money. So it'd be like this. Say you and I were hotel owners in Round Rock.
Right.
The city comes to you and says, all right, Tony, it's time to pay your taxes. We'll take $100,000. And then they come over to me and say, hey, we really like your hotel. We want you to be here. Here's this $100,000. And also, you don't have to pay as much in taxes, and we'll waive a few of these development fees and stuff.
Yeah, you know, this is billed as a way to spur economic development. You always hear politicians talking about, oh, we're running a campaign here. We're going to create jobs. And they're not really, they don't create jobs. They take money from one person and they give it to somebody else. And really, it ends up being very unfair.
Right. I mean, aside from all of the economic aspects of this, you know, interfering with the market, this is wrong. This is the city picking winners and losers when it should offer an equally favorable playing field for all businesses. I mean, that would spur growth across the entire city, not just for a handful of companies.
Yeah. Now, one of the examples that you cited, too, was the example of Emerson there in Round Rock. And I thought the numbers you ran were kind of illustrative of of the problem. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So the city, on their website, they cite a lot of big deals, past deals that they've done to bring companies to town. And for them to take credit is hilarious, because in 2011, they offered $1 million to Emerson to come to Round Rock. But that year, Emerson made $24 billion. So that means Round Rock's incentives were worth 0.004%, 0.004 of Emerson's total money. So that would be like if you were looking for a job and you got salary offers of $50,000.
Lots of people saying, hey, yeah, I'll give you 50 grand over here, 50 grand over here, 50 grand over here. You're like, man, which job do I want to take?
Yeah. But one employer says, oh, I got it. I'll give you two extra dollars. to come here.
And they break. I sealed the deal with my big $2.
That's what did it. That's what brought him.
My big $2 signing offer. Well, I really like the article. I encourage listeners, go to texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com/news and see the article there. It is true. It is something that goes on statewide, and it really is something that we need to pay more attention to. It's a real problem. Thanks for joining us,
Absolutely.
Jacob.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
This week, it's a pleasure to welcome on Texas Scorecard Radio Thomas McNutt, a candidate for state representative out of Corsicana. Thomas, thank you for coming on the program.
Heck yeah, Tony. It's good to be with you, brother.
Yeah. You know, a couple years ago, you ran against State Representative Byron Cook, one of the most liberal Republicans in the Texas House of Representatives, and came up just shy in that race, and you're running again. This time, Cook has gotten out of the way, and you're running in an open race, and now in a runoff election. But the two sides, it's really kind of the same sort of situation that we were looking at in the past.
Yeah, you know, you're right. When I try to bring people up to speed with my story running for the state house, you know, what I tell them is that I ran against, like you said, Byron Cook, who is by far one of the most liberal and certainly the most wealthy and powerful chairman in the state of Texas. And man, I was told I had no chance to beat this guy.
Right.
I'm a young guy. I'm standing here. I'm about to turn 28 years old. And when I ran against Byron Cook, I was 25 years old. And the 25-year-old against the mighty powerful chairman who spent $1.5 million to beat me, I was told I was going to get slaughtered. And really the only weapon that I had on the ground to fight against the machine, so to speak, as I knocked on doors, Tony, I just go talk to people. So I knocked on 6,434 doors myself, asking voters, hey, what do you want your state rep doing in Austin?
What are they telling you? What would you hear?
Well, that's a great question, man. Well, they tell me that they're very, very frustrated. And there was a difference last campaign, you know, to this one. And from what I'm hearing at the door, you know, last campaign, getting outspent three to one by the chairman on election night, when a lot of people thought we'd lose by 20 or 30 points, we ended up getting 49.61% of the vote.
Yeah. It was neck and neck all night.
Yeah. The 25-year-old nothing against the chairman. we lost by 222 votes out of nearly 30,000 and really, really kind of shocked the world with that. And so I stepped out to run against Byron Cook again in April. And so April, May, June, July, August, September, and 3 weeks in October, Byron Cook and I were running against each other. And then when Texas Speaker Joe Strauss decided to hop out, Byron Cook announced that he was out of the legislature as well within an hour of one another.
Yeah, right.
And so I've got Byron Cook's the person that he's supporting is my opponent in the runoff. But I'll tell you what people are saying at the door, Tony. They're, you know, last election when I ran, Barack Obama was still our president. And
right.
When I'm talking to the primary voters, there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of frustration.
A lot of fear. Fear, too.
Yeah, fear and frustration. They were mad at governments, right? They were mad about their property taxes. They were mad about illegal immigration. Right. And they were mad that American citizens were kind of getting a back seat to the people who should be taken care of.
Excuse me,
to the people who shouldn't. This time it's a little bit different. You know, since that election, President Trump got elected, we had a special session in the Texas House. And now people seem to be a lot more worried about we're losing our culture.
Yeah.
You know, when I ran last time, Tony, we weren't really talking about, you know, which war memorial to tear down next. We weren't even discussing whether or not to stand for the national anthem. You know, when I ran before, we weren't even discussing whether a man's a man and whether a woman's a woman.
And yet, 2 years later, here we are just on some of these crazy topics.
That's right, man. And so people are just fearful that we're losing our culture and we're getting disconnected from the morality and the basic principles that made this country great to begin with.
Right.
And Tony, as you and I both know, no politician is going to wave a magic wand and save us. You know,
yeah, and we don't want to think that that's the way it's going to happen. I mean, it's the opposite,
right? Exactly, and so you know, I think culture is upstream from politics. And
that's
we're
right.
Gonna, you know, and I think the true savior for our society is going to come from the church and the private sector and private philanthropy. And honestly, saving our culture begins in our homes.
Yeah.
So what do you even want from a politician? If you got cultural issues, what do you want from your elected officials? Well, I think. First, you want them to understand their role, okay? And the role of every single representative is to simply represent home, represent his neighbors, not represent the special interests, but represent home. And then second of all, government, you know, we as conservatives believe that government simply exists to protect the rights that come from God.
Right.
Right? Rights of life, liberty, and property, right? And the pursuit of happiness. And so I do think no politician is going to save us. But what you do need is in these crucial roles of government, in these crucial roles of leadership, you need someone who has the right perspective of what government should be doing.
Yeah.
And that is defending your rights.
Well, and in your race, you have a clear choice there for voters between, you know, there's really these two teams. One set of candidates who want to represent their communities and who understand the role of government and who are in it to serve. And another set who are recruited by special interests, backed by big, you know, Austin money, and who are running to serve those interests and are trying to basically hoodwink voters into right. voting for them.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And I have an opponent who is funded by the vast majority of his campaign by the Austin lobby, right? And when the word special interest gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
But what does it really mean? Okay. A true special interest dollar, a true special interest lobby, the true special interests are people who are in Austin. They work the system, right? And the way that, and they aren't there to represent a holistic picture for Texas.
Right.
The special interests aren't there for an overall free and prosperous
Texas. They're advocating for themselves.
They're advocating for very, very laser-pointed, specific issues. You know, sure. You got somebody, you know, the kind of mythical example that I put up is, you know, they're there to represent, you know, left-handed screwdriver operators of Minnesota, right? And if they're there just for left-handed screwdriver operators of Minnesota, and it's their goal to make sure that left-handed screwdriver operators of Minnesota never pay another dime of taxes, if the rest of Texas suffers for their little bitty group, then they don't have to pay taxes again, they win.
Yeah.
That's what the special interests are,
right.
As opposed to having representatives who are freed up to look at the whole picture and vote on principle rather than specific little laser pointer issues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, the getting into this runoff and how things change. You know, most people out there, they maybe... You know, well, most people kind of think of these things in terms of these big general elections. They think of the president, you know, they maybe think of the
sure.
race for Congress. But, you know, as you and I are well aware, as you're well aware, you know, and this is what motivated you to get involved at this level, you know, these races are decided in the primary, most of these
right.
races. And obviously, I believe your district, very Republican district. Is there any even a Democrat on the ballot?
There is a Democrat on the ballot, but my district voted 78% for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton.
Right, right. So basically unlikely that this Democrat would potentially win. So
unlikely.
These things are decided in the Republican primary, and that's true all over the board. And so there's a lot of people who are starting to tune in and say, you know, this is where I need to be focusing my attention. I need to be making the right choices in the primary elections, where there is kind of a variety of options as opposed to, you know, elephant versus donkey. Dramatically, there's some nuance to one Republican versus another, and you can actually get some good folks in and not just have to pick the lesser of two evils. But they don't even realize, you know, we've got this runoff election going on. Right. So you have this primary election that happened. Your field, you know, had three candidates, cut one out, and now you're into two. And you have to do it all over again. So how is that going as you're gearing up? I guess we're getting into May for the runoff election.
Sure. I mean, look, runoffs are just as important, if not more important, than Republican primaries, because it's really, really time to separate, and make true contrast between the real conservatives in the race and the people who simply are the conservative campaigns, you know, that have everybody runs as a conservative.
Right.
Right. But very few govern as a conservative. Right.
And so what do we know about your opponent, you know, from a tangible standpoint?
Well, sure. Well, Byron Cook, who's been the incumbent here for a very long time, he's the guy who killed the bill that would have ended sanctuary cities in the state of Texas. He's the guy who authored the bill to give illegal immigrants driver's license in the state of Texas. Byron Cook was the guy who said as long as he's in the Texas House, in-state tuition to our colleges will always be a right of illegal immigrants in this state. That was Byron Cook, who I ran against before.
Right.
Okay. And my opponent that I'm up against now was one of Byron Cook's biggest supporters in his election against
me. So he
me.
Approved of those policy positions.
Well,
but, of course, he isn't saying that on the campaign trail.
That's right. No, on the campaign trail, he tries to distance himself. But people are smart. People are smart. But let me tell you this. What I, as a candidate, is look, I've been a, as a young guy, I've always been a political activist, a small donor, but a consistent donor to good conservative causes and candidates. I've been knocking on doors for campaigns, you know, since I was in middle school, right?
Sure.
I've always had a passion, to have principled good government, right?
Right.
But now doing this candidate thing's kind of new to me, right? I've been an activist my whole life. I've been a candidate for just a couple years now, and it's a different paradigm. And I tell you what I wish as a candidate, every single voter would do, okay? And that is this. I wish every single voter would do their homework. You know, political candidates are kind of like Tony. They're kind of like the turtle on the fence post, right? They didn't quite get there on their own.
Right.
And everybody has to go and get help for their campaign. And so what's oftentimes important is don't just look at the advertisements for the candidates, because everybody's going to try to look like the most conservative, anti-establishment, candidate possible.
They're going to tell people what they want to hear.
That's right. Exactly. Okay. But to really find out the guts of it, you got to go see, you know, who helped that turtle get on the fence post, right? He didn't get there by himself. And so I'll tell you a great resource that I think is wonderful, if I'm allowed to give a plug for it.
Sure, go ahead.
TransparencyTexas.org.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. It's a good friend's Transparency Texas. Absolutely.
Phenomenal website, transparencytexas.org. And, you know, these campaign, as long as you've had the internet, these campaign financial reports have always been, quote unquote, made public and out on the internet. But sometimes it's hard to really, they're not the most user-friendly website.
Yeah, completely indecipherable to anyone who's not, I struggle with them and I'm a lawyer, but
right.
Completely indecipherable.
Transparency Texas is basically pushing the easy button to find out where these candidates are really getting their back.
How that turtle got on the fence. Well, thank you, Thomas, for joining us today. Thank you for coming on the program, and keep up the hard work out there. Thank you for sacrificing to run for office. We're out of time, but I want you to plug real quick. Tell listeners where they can find out more about your campaign.
Well, if you're listening right now, I just say if you want true Christian conservative principled leadership in government. I need your help. I need your help. And I'd encourage you to go to my website, thomasmcnutt.com, 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 and A, pray for us. The prayers of the righteous avail as much, Scripture says, but also go to thomasmcnutt.com. These campaigns aren't free, and we would appreciate, there's no contribution too small, but you can learn more about me. You can get in contact with us. We need your prayers, and we need your support. And Tony, I appreciate your time, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, Thomas. Thanks for joining us. In this week's commentary, Ross Kessig tells us about a North Texas taxpayer who was victorious over his local bureaucracy.
Texas taxpayers should never allow local governments to block access to public records, and government officials who defy the law by obstructing taxpayers should be held accountable. To that end, I'd like to tell you about a Texan who fought against government obstruction and won. With the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Ross Kessig. Thanks to a persistent taxpayer named Steve Waltons, the Grapevine Colleyville Independent School District gave up on its attempt to block access to government emails. Initially, they had asked Waltons to pay a $15,000 ransom for their release. That's right, a public school district tried to charge a taxpayer $15,000 for electronic copies of emails. Why the huge price tag? Because Waltons asked for emails discussing the district's voting initiative that was also under scrutiny by Texas's Attorney General. More than 100 school boards, including GCISDs, passed a culture of voting resolution. The effort was sold to the public as an attempt to encourage voter turnout amongst teachers and staff. But the resolution language also approved the taxpayer-funded promotion of websites, websites that support and opposed candidates, to district employees. Walton sought emails discussing the initiative, as state and federal laws prohibit governments from using taxpayer resources on electioneering. Walton's requested emails contained certain keywords, such as culture of voting, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and names of other political groups behind the culture of voting effort. The district responded, claiming that 18,766 emails were potentially responsive to the request. This shocked Walton's. Why were school board members and district staff spending so much time and on the taxpayers' dime talking about a voting effort that had nothing to do with educating children? But even worse, the district wouldn't release the emails. No matter how Walton's clarified his request, the district refused to lower its ridiculous price tag, citing, quote, technological barriers, end quote. They claimed that even an inspection of electronic copies would still cost $15,000. After 2 months of stall tactics and delays, Waltons notified the district he had prepared a complaint to the Texas Attorney General's office. Within a few days, the district had backed down, claiming they had magically found a solution and lowered their estimate from $15,000 to only $375. Waltons is now digging through the 18,000 emails. Some of the records revealed the superintendent made a presentation to staff encouraging them to use two websites prior to voting in the 2018 primary, both of which listed legislative endorsements. At the request of Republican State Senator Paul Betancourt of Houston, the Attorney General opined that portions of the resolutions allowed staff to engage in illegal activity, including the sharing of political websites. Texas's Attorney General Ken Paxton has sent cease and desist letters to five other school districts, citing examples of unlawful electioneering by school administrators. And 2 months after Walton's began his pursuit of GCISD's emails, the AG's office submitted their own request to the district asking for emails. Texans should be encouraged by Walton's persistence and should never allow governments to block public access to public records. But Texas needs more taxpayers who are willing to hold elected officials accountable. After all, we often get the government we choose to ignore. I'm Ross Kessig with the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, the last grain on our sand timer is about to drop, and that means we're at the end of the program. Thank you for joining us. Join us back here next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.